Warning, this podcast contains spoilers and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
You was fun.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. And in keeping with current times, we are socially distancing ourselves from 5,000 miles away. On the phone, I have Richard. How you doing, Richard?
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm living the everyday dream of going to work in this pandemic, this worldwide pandemic. So enjoying,
yeah, right there with you.
Enjoying every second of it. But so now year two of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast, I'm going a little darker this time, and we covered a movie from 1987. It is a German movie and deals with some rather interesting subject material. That movie is
Jörg Buttgereit.
Okay, I'll let you say it. Say it again.
Jörg Buttgereit.
All right, so we covered his 1987 masterpiece, Necromantic, and surprisingly has a 5.0 on IMDb, which, you know, I wouldn't necessarily expect from a movie like this. Okay, now last time you were drinking Lucozade.
Mm-hmm.
And then the time before that, you were drinking something. What do you got there today?
I have got a can, well, two cans of Lost Lager by BrewDog.
Okay. Microbrew or?
It's a fairly generic lager.
Oh, all right. All right. Fair enough. So, as Richard said, Jörg Buttgereit is a German director. And are you familiar at all with any American TV, especially from the 80s or the late 70s and early 80s? Probably not, because you're a youngster.
Yeah, I mean, I might have heard of something, but I doubt I would have watched it.
Okay, well, there was a television show called The Waltons, and I did notice in the opening credits that the music for this movie was by John Boy Walton, who was one of the characters on that TV show, and it just struck me as kind of odd that they would, or that whoever the music guy was for this movie, chose that screen name. But yeah, as we said, Jörg Buttgereit, 1987, Necromantic, 5.0 on IMDb. You know you're in for a treat when the very first thing on your screen is a warning that reads, "Some of this film may be seen as grossly offensive and should not be shown to minors." And then there's another quote, "What lives that does not live from the death of someone else?" V.L. Compton. So you know you're in for a treat right away.
It seems to be a common theme in all of Jörg's films that they always start with a very ominous, grueling quote, usually from a serial killer or something.
Yeah, is V.L. Compton, is he a killer, or I didn't even know who that was.
I have no idea, but I know the guy whose quote he took for De Tolk's King, which is another one of his films, was from a French poet / serial killer.
All right, so I'll look into that then. I'll look into that then. First thing you see right off the bat is a woman pulling her underwear down, and because she has to pee roadside. Nothing is shown, but the woman gets back into her car, and there's a man waiting for her. And as she's going pee, the man's yelling, "Come on, you know, we're never going to get there if you don't hurry up." And or what does he say? "If you have to pee every 10 minutes, we're never going to get there." Something like that. And as the man and woman are driving along, they're obviously lost. And she pulls out a map, and then he looks at the map while he's driving, and they end up getting into a car wreck. Right away, you know, straight off the bat, you don't see actually what happens at this point, but then, because you cut to the title screen, but immediately after the title sequence, and this is where I noticed the John Boy Walton name, but you cut back to the car and the wreck, and you see the man, and he's laying back in the driver's seat, and his eyeballs hanging out of his head, and then the camera continues to pan over. The woman is laying in this field, and she's been ripped in half with her guts hanging out of her, and, you know, I mean, obviously she's dead. So, but I got to imagine, I mean, this film, it looks very student filmish.
Yeah, all of his films have a very, I mean, they obviously are low budget, because I can't think of any high-class production studio that's going to finance films like this, but
right.
Yeah, they just seem like they're filmed on, like, a home camcorder, not a professional movie camera.
Right.
And they all, it's the footage is dead grainy and damaged and...
And a shoestring budget to boot, but...
yeah, whether it's, you know, a budgetary or decision, I don't know.
And then, but, I mean, for being low budget and for being a, I don't want to say an amateur director, but the gore effects in the movie, or at least in this scene, were pretty good.
Yeah. I think he does a lot of the effects himself as well.
Yeah, that was one of the other things I noticed in the opening credits, that it did say special effects by Jorg. So then we get this crime scene cleanup, and they arrive. And, you know, rather than picking up the entire half of the woman, and I don't even know where her lower half is, but rather than picking her all up, they scoop her guts out first and bag those, and then they pick up the half of the woman and bag her.
But what struck me as odd is that they don't even wear gloves. They're just picking up her spilled guts barehandedly.
Okay, see, I didn't even notice that, but what caught me off guard was the fact that after they're done loading the body parts up into the van that they were in, they ride in the back of the van with the body parts and the, you know, the deceased bodies.
Yeah. But they're not even in, like, proper body bags. They're just put in a standard bin liner.
Yeah, just a normal... God damn, I love talking to people from other countries. Yes, just a trash bag. So, yeah, they scoop the woman's guts out, then they bag her up, and then they pan over again to the guy. One guy actually pulls his eyeball off. I don't understand the point in doing that, but he pulls the eyeball off the guy, bags that, and then they pull the guy out of the car and put him into a bag. And one of the other things I noticed, and again, this goes back to the whole low budget thing, was the angle grinder that they were using to cut open the car. I mean, you could obviously tell that it was basically chipping away the paint and nothing else. I don't know if you caught that.
Yeah, yeah, it didn't look like a professional piece of equipment that, right, you know, they would use. It just looks like a home DIY tool.
Essentially, yeah. And it was throwing sparks, but it was only removing the paint. So now we go to, and I didn't write down the German spelling of this. Joe Street Cleaning Crew is the name of the group that goes out and cleans up the blood and the guts. Now, all these guys are walking around and they got their white body suits on, or not body suits, but their white plastic coveralls. One guy comes in to take a leak, and the only thing I could think while he's doing this is, and I mean, because it's basically an up-close view, I mean, they don't show his dick or anything, but, you know, he's got really poor flow, so he better get his prostate checked is really the only thing I could think of. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm older, but you know, I don't have that issue, but that dude was struggling. So new guy comes home now, and you come to find out that this is one of the main characters, but you don't know his name at this point. So this guy comes home and he's still in his personal protection equipment, and he starts,
yeah, which is like covered in blood still. You'd think it'd be like company policy to make sure you've disposed of it before leaving work.
Right. And at one point he actually gets chewed out because he left his coveralls bloody in his locker. And that's the point where they end up firing him. But we'll get to that that we'll get to that a little bit later. So he's putting these body parts from the accident into these jars. And, you know, you got to assume that there's maybe formaldehyde or something in the jars. But he's got, you know, eyeballs and he's got hands and there was even a baby fetus in there. And he ends up putting one of the victim's heart into the jar. And of course, you know, it's all beat up and mangled and it doesn't even look like a heart.
What I don't get about this, though, is this not going to raise questions when the bodies arrive at the coroner's office? Because I imagine once they've bagged everything up, there's going to be a log of what they were able to reclaim. So if they've written down, body one, two eyeballs, and it gets to the coroner's office, and it's like, well, there's a missing eyeball, mate. He's got multiple different parts in his little fucking collection.
It's a big collection.
It's obviously he's been doing this for a while, and if these bodies are constantly going to the coroner's office and parts are missing, why aren't they raising questions with Joe Street Cleaning's agency?
I think probably in the real world it would happen, but, you know, I mean, this movie being what it is, I don't think anybody would ask any questions, honestly. But I think in the real world, yes, it would probably come to that point where, yeah, if something's missing, I mean, unless there's a chance that it got thrown from the car or whatever and they just weren't able to recover it. But for the most part, yeah, I think in the real world, yes, that would come up, you know. Where is this guy's eyeball, or where is this person's heart, or, you know, whatever the case may be with the body part. Girlfriend now taking a bloody bath, and this is actually this is where things start really going downhill with the movie in terms of weirdness and just the, I don't want to say grittiness, but like the goriness, I guess, or the, I don't know, what's a good word to describe really what happens? The weirdness? I don't know.
The vulgarity?
The vulgarity. That works out perfectly. The girlfriend is taking a bloody bath, and the new guy is out watching a show. He's watching a show on the bed, which, by the way, the bed has a chain link headboard and footboard, and then also like femurs and bones and stuff like that.
Yeah, it looks like something Ed Gein would sleep on.
that's a good description. So he's watching this movie on the TV show about phobias and fears and like...
Yeah, it's all about phobias and fears and anxiety and how to deal with it and just shite like that. I think it's trying to cram down the message of the movie.
I think a little bit, yes. I think, you know, kind of an excuse to justify what's to come here in a little bit.
Because this is probably the most dialogue-heavy scene in the film. This is where a lot of the talking is, but there's not an awful amount of dialogue in this film.
No, and it is all dubbed, so that's another thing you might want to, or not dubbed, I'm sorry, but subtitled. So that's one thing you might want to take into account if you're watching this movie. Well, now we cut to a rabbit being smacked on the head, and it gets its throat cut and ultimately skinned. The rabbit scene is actually intercut with the autopsy. Now, was the guy doing the autopsy, was he the same guy that had the collection, or...
Yeah, I think it is. It's like a little daydream sequence, isn't it? Because it cuts back and forth between the rabbit being skinned and him doing an autopsy, and then eventually he, like, clicks out of it.
Okay. I couldn't tell if it was him or... Yeah, but, yeah, if it was a daydream, that makes sense now. So we get this German patriot, I guess it would be, and he's chilling in his back lawn with some music playing, and he's got a little, I guess it's a sawed-off, like, pellet gun or something. And next to him, his neighbor, either the doors in Germany are really super tiny, or that guy was, like, 7 feet tall. And I couldn't really figure out which, but...
I'm going to go with the tiny doors, because obviously later on, when he's a decayed corpse, he doesn't seem that tall.
Spoiler alert, he dies. But, I see what you're saying. I get what you're saying. So the tiny neighbor, anyway, the neighbor starts picking apples, and the patriot starts shooting at birds with his gun. and somehow hits the neighbor in the neck with a pellet or a BB or whatever he's shooting. The neighbor falls and dies, and the Patriot German takes the body in a wheelbarrow, starts rolling him down the street, and ultimately ends up dumping him in a little swampy marsh area.
There was a bit of humor in this scene. The whole way it like sort of transitioned and filmed, it was a bit slapsticky.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when he's pushing the body down the street or down the back alley in the wheelbarrow,
because he's like sort of like looking around nervously, like, oh, holy fucking shit, I hope nobody sees me fucking dragging this fucking dead dude around in a fucking wheelbarrow.
Right, and yeah, it's almost Benny Hillish kind of.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Yeah, you could definitely see with the music going on.
So Joe's street cleaning crew is called again, and then we find out that Rob, who's one of the main characters, he's told to take care of the body. He ends up stealing it and he takes it home, and then this is where the really weird shit starts going down.
Yeah, this is like the, I guess, the headliner scene of the movie. This is what This is the ticket in, I guess. This is what people have paid to see, for better or worse.
This would be the Art the Clown sawing the woman in half kind of thing. So Betty, his girlfriend, is absolutely thrilled about the dead body. And they don't talk about it. They just somehow do it. Rob ends up making a prosthetic dick out of wood, appropriately.
Was it wood? I swear it was like a metal rod or something.
I think it was a wood shaft with like a metal cap on it.
Right.
Which I guess would
be. It raises the question, like, why not just attach like a strap on or a dildo to it? Like, why do you need this fucking whatever it is?
Probably because they. Well, I don't know. How do you answer that question? Probably because they were low budget. I mean, she wasn't working, and he was, and apparently was not very good at his job. So my guess is that they didn't have a lot of money, so they just had to use what they had to, you know, get the job done.
I'm sure they could scrimp and save some appropriate sex toys for their sick, twisted perversions.
Well, of course, by the time they saved, the body would be too far gone.
I feel like they'd be into that.
Possibly. I don't know.
The body's already fucked.
Well, it was. Yeah, and this is, you know, I gotta give Jorg credit for his level of detail, but yeah, it's weird.
The best part is they even go to the effort of putting a Johnny on the makeshift penis.
Right. And like, that was the first time.
You're fucking a corpse. Are you really worried about STDs?
I think probably more splinters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as Richard said, they take this wooden makeshift penis and they somehow screw it onto the dead corpse, which is now laying on the bed. And then they cover it with a condom. And then immediately she climbs on top and Rob is behind her. So now you have to assume that maybe there's a little double penetration. I don't know. Or is he just, I don't know. But so Rob comes up to the front now and I giggled then like I am now. Rob starts sucking the eyeball out of the head and then spits it back into the eye socket, and then he sucks it back out and then spits it back in, and he does this like two or three times, and then he starts necking on the body, and then for whatever reason they stand the body up and it's just so fucking weird. Betty starts making out with the corpse and the eyeball that Rob was just sucking on just falls right out of
it. You can see like the goop like clinging to like her lips and like snapping off, and it's like, this is just vile.
I know how much you hate that.
And the funniest part is it's even scored with just like really stereotypical sex scene passionate music.
Right. Well, that's the John Boy Walton. He did a good job. So, yeah, so Betty's making out with this corpse and the eyeball just falls falls out of the head and just falls right past her face and onto the floor. So apparently they all got off, or well, at least Rob and Betty did.
Yeah, I'm not sure about old Corpsey.
So, and then, you know, of course, after sex, you got to eat. So they go and they, he makes a steak or something, and then they hang the body up and it's like dripping and oozing and...
Yeah, because they have to put like plates down underneath it to catch all the fucking blood and goop.
Yeah, it's like a person stew almost dripping into these, yeah, bowls or plates or whatever.
Like, if these guys ever get like an inspection from like their landlord or something, they're fucking screwed.
Yeah, they're not going to get their deposit back.
They're going to fucking hide this shit.
And then I love later when, I don't want to go this far, but she steals the body and you can see the outline on the wall of where the corpse had bled into the wall. So Rob goes back to work, and Betty is reading to the corpse. I don't even know what the story was, but it's, yeah, not important. And then she makes the corpse perform.
Yeah, what is she getting out of this?
I don't know.
I guess she's getting off more on the fantasy of it than the actual stimulation.
That had to be it. I don't know. It would have to be just the fantasy, and, you know, because, well, I mean, she was rubbing it up and down, so maybe there was a little bit of stimulation there, but yeah, it's just weird. So... Betty,
well, what I want to know is how the fuck did Rob and Betty even meet and find out they both had this fucking deranged kink, you know? No fucking kink shaming. But I don't imagine it's the sort of thing you bring up on your first date, like, oh, hey, Betty, I'm Rob, I like to fuck corpses. Oh, I like to fuck corpses too.
See, I think that's where the play along with the documentary that Rob was watching earlier comes into play, because it's about fears and phobias and, you know, things like that. So I think maybe it's one of those situations where, like, it had been brought up before, but it was never fully explored. And then when the opportunity arose, when they found this guy, he decided to, you know, test the threshold and bring this body home, maybe. And because there was one point in the documentary that the doctor was talking about how, you know, he had a patient that was deathly afraid of spiders, and he put a spider on her hand and she was immediately cured. So I'm almost wondering if we're supposed to believe that, you know, it had been thought about or talked about, but until they actually had a body to do something with, they had only just talked about it. At least that would be my...
Yeah. I get the impression that there's been, like, stepping stones, and that sort of...
Right.
Explains the collection on the shelf, you know? That maybe they've started, like, oh, I found an eye. Let's rub this eye against each other, see how we do.
And then right.
Progress from there in a... Yeah, whatever floats your boat, guys. Whatever floats your boat.
Well, you don't want to kink shame, but I think, you know... Having sex with a corpse is, you can kink shame that one.
Yeah, corpses can't give consent, guys. Don't fuck corpses.
So, yeah, Rob, he gets fired. And this is where we were talking about. He left his coveralls bloody in his locker, and they his co-workers had found him. Actually, they followed the smell, and they opened up his locker.
If they think that's fucking bad, they should see his fucking house.
Yeah, well, at least everything in there is in jars, you know, not just hanging out in the open.
I don't imagine it smells pleasant.
Well, yeah.
Especially not the hanging corpse on the wall.
That would be an unpleasant scent, I got to imagine, for sure. So, yeah, ultimately, Rob ends up getting fired. He goes back home and he tells Betty that he got canned, and she gets pissed off at him, starts yelling about how, you know, is she supposed to go out to work to support them two, and,
yes,
you know.
Why not? Why can't she get a job? It's not like they've got kids to watch. She literally just sits at home all day, getting corpses go down on her. You can get a job,
bloody baths. Ultimately, yeah, she ends up leaving Rob, and in between that time, Rob actually got her a cat. As kind of a, you know, I'm going to make it up to you kind of thing. He comes home from wherever he got the cat, and he finds a note on the bed from Betty that says, you know, that she can't deal with him. She doesn't want to be with him. She doesn't want to spend the rest of her life with somebody that makes her angry, and that she took her, or their friend in quotation marks, off to go somewhere else. This clip I've seen, Rob is, he's playing with the cat. He ultimately ends up putting the cat in one of the plastic bags. And now you don't see the cat actually die. So before we go any farther, let's just say that. I don't think Jorg killed a cat, okay? But he puts the cat, in quotations, in the plastic bag, and he starts beating the bag against the wall, a la Camper in the sleeping bag from Friday the 13th, 7. So the cat's dead now, and Rob takes the cat and he guts it and hangs it up above his bath so that the blood from the cat is dripping into the bathwater. Then Rob reaches up, actually pulls some of the guts out of the cat and starts rubbing it on his face and his chest and just, you know, shit gets just like fucking off here. So, Rob ultimately, or Rob goes to a movie now. Backtrack here. So after the bath, he takes the pills and has a drink.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And he falls into the sleep and he has this weird drug-induced dream, I guess it would be, where he's, and I didn't see the woman, but he's throwing guts back and forth with her and like swinging the guts around over his head and getting a lot of feedback from your speaker there.
I'm not hearing anything on my end.
Oh, I think it's when your headphones get close to your mic or something.
Is it doing it now?
Oh, no, it's not. I don't know what it was. I don't know. Maybe it was my end. I don't know. Okay, sorry. So, yeah, Rob falls into the sleep and he has a dream. And in the dream, he sees a woman walking towards him and she's carrying a box. And he opens up the box and there's guts inside. Was it just guts? I missed the part. What was actually in the box?
Yeah, I think it is just guts. And isn't there like a bag with a body in it, or is that later?
Shit, I don't remember. But so anyway, yeah, Rob's in this dream state.
I swear there's a bit in the dream where there's a body bag that opens and a bloody rotten corpse comes out, and I think he's got an eye missing. I don't know if it's supposed to be the same guy that died in the car accident or what, or it's a completely different body. Fuck knows.
The whole movie is a who the fuck knows. So this is the point. Yeah, he goes to the theater, the cinema, and he's watching a movie, and the movie is called Jonah, or I'm sorry, Juno. Was it Juno? Jenna. Shit, I thought I had it written down.
I don't remember. Was it not Vera or something? Like
Vera,
that?
That's what. Yeah, Vera. So yes, the movie.
I think. I could be remembering it wrong, but I'm pretty sure the fake film that was in the Torts King was also called Vera, and it was called Vera, Angel of Death.
Okay.
And it was like a Nazi exploitation mock film.
Okay. I looked it up and yeah, there is no movie called Vera. So, in the movie, at the cinema, a woman gets killed and Rob gets all uncomfortable. And now this is after he's brought a corpse home to his girlfriend and killed a cat and, you know, picked up guts on the side of the road and everything. So now he goes to find a call girl, or a woman of the night, prostitute, whatever you want to call her. And He pulls up to the first one, and he asks her something, and she says, no, not for me. So he pulls up a little bit more, and he asks her, and she says, well, yeah, but, you know, it's going to cost you more. So they go to a cemetery, and he puts her up on a tombstone, and he tries to get it on with her, and he can't get it up. So he starts strangling the prostitute. And it's only...
Yeah, he lashes out her. He calls her a cunt and everything, doesn't he?
He does.
But, like, I mean, I'm not defending his actions by any means, but you'd think prostitutes would be more understanding. I'm sure they deal with nervous clients all the time.
You'd think so.
If you're paying for somebody for sex, it's sort of part of their side of the deal to make you feel comfortable, and if you're not getting it up, you know, they should be more reassuring than, you know, just fucking laughing in your fucking face.
That same thing happened in another movie that your co-host and I covered not too long ago.
So,
it's only after she's dead that he can get it up and he starts to have sex with the corpse laying there on the grave. He ultimately passes out, and an old man shows up in the morning. He sees Rob. The old man starts freaking out. The old man was also carrying a shovel. He must have been the groundskeeper or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Rob picks up the shovel that the old man drops, and he gives it a nice full swing and just chops the guy's head off. Basically from the mouth.
It's a very clean cut for a shovel. So I question the authenticity of this moment.
Well, wasn't there another movie? Was it Friday the 13th where Jason shoveled the top of a guy's head off? Of course, he stepped on it. He didn't just swing it.
Yeah, I don't remember which one.
Was that 6?
I should know. I watched them all, like, 2 months ago. All the Friday the 13th tend to blur into one for me.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch them, I tend to do all of them, and then I just sort of forget which one is which.
Right. But anyway, so yeah, Rob takes the shovel and hacks the top of the guy's head off, and he dies and twitches and everything.
Again, the effects are pretty decent. It's one of the few positive things I have to say about this film. The effects are great.
True. Yes, I liked them. I mean, for what they, and even, I mean, even the corpse was good for what it was, especially with the slime and the ooze, you know, running out of it.
Yeah.
Rob now is in a field watching birds. He gets up and he starts jumping for joy. Like he feels almost like he's been vindicated or relieved or something. I don't know exactly why, or maybe he's figured something out. But he goes back home and he lays down on the bed.
I'm surprised he didn't take the fucking groundskeeper back with him. He's like, you know, I could have a few rounds with him.
He's got an extra hole in his head now. So Rob goes.
Many holes to go.
Rob goes back home, and he grabs a knife and he tries to stab himself in the gut. He's unsuccessful. So he lays back on the bed and he pulls out this really unrealistic looking dick, and he stabs himself in the guts now. This time he's able to puncture his stomach. And
which causes a fucking tidal wave of semen to come out of his knob.
I went with fire hose.
For all the positive things we've been saying about the effects, the dick looks terrible. Anybody in this film ever seen a penis?
Well, the last penis they saw was made out of wood and metal. So...
It's a step up from that one, I guess.
Slightly. Not by much. Although they could have used that prosthetic for the corpse earlier and then reused it again for later.
Very true.
So, he pulls out this very unrealistic looking penis, and he stabs himself in the gut, and as he's twisting the knife around and re-stabbing himself, he orgasms, and it's not just cum, it's blood, and it's like spraying on the walls, and very hilarious. This is another one of those scenes that I just giggled like like I am now. And as Rob is doing this to himself, they're playing the rabbit skinning scene in reverse. So the rabbit gets its skin back on, gets its guts, it gets its skin back on. You see the blood go back up into the neck of the rabbit, and then you see the old farmer, pick up the rabbit and pet it. I don't know if what Rob was doing was a pleasure pain thing a la Hellraiser, or if it was just a pleasure pain thing, like to put himself out of his misery, like he's finally happy to be dead or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's a both. It's a mixed bag. It's like his ultimate release, but it also brings on his death. But it seems worth it for him. It's almost like he's finally becoming what he's obsessed with.
Right. Okay. And then we cut to his grave, and you see his poorly written gravestone.
Do you mind a mild spoiler for Necromantic 2?
Not at all. I don't have it, so...
Rob, in the second one, is the corpse that is getting fucked.
Okay. Well, I kind of figured that would have to be where they went. Just because, I mean, you see his grave.
The second one builds on from the end scene of this one.
Okay. So, yeah, I kind of figured that's probably where they'd go, being that the end scene, you see his grave. And it pans down to the fresh dirt on top. And then you see a woman's foot pushing a shovel into the dirt, which we have to assume is to dig him up. And then the credits roll. So, yeah, that was 1987's Necromantic. I'll let you go first. Give me your gore score out of 10, sir.
Gore score. I mean, it does have some gore in it, and the gore is decent, I guess, but it's not really the focus of the film. It's not, non-stop blood and guts for 90 minutes, so I'd maybe give it around a 6.
Okay, that's fair. And then I have a feeling I know how low your overall score is going to be, but hit me with that anyway.
So we're going like out of 10?
Yeah.
Again? I mean, if I'm being unbiased, it's not an awful film. So I don't know, maybe like a 6.5 or a generous 7. It's very well done for what they have to work with. It's just subject matter is not really my cup of tea. Films aren't really my cup of tea, so it doesn't really deliver what I want. But I do think there are a lot of positive things about the film for people that are into extreme horror films or art films. I think those sorts of people might enjoy it. The score's pretty good. It fits the film really well.
That is a much higher score than I thought you were going to give it.
Yeah. If I was giving it, if we go to what we do over on my show, where we sort of do an unbiased rating of the film itself, and then we do what we call the fun factor, right. I'd probably give the fun factor a whopping half a star, because it's just not really
not a fun movie.
No, it's just not something I want to watch. It's the same thing with is all his other films. I don't regret any of watching any of them, but I don't really enjoy watching them. I don't really find them entertaining. I don't think this is as shocking or... Well, it is shocking, but I wouldn't say it's as disturbing as something like The Torx King.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
The Torx King does actually linger with me, but Necromantic, it's just a case of like, well, that was gross. I mean, I think he is trying to say a lot with his film about death and coping with it and obsessions, and then you go on to the whole thing where you've got the documentary going on about fear and anxiety. So I think there is a lot of substance in the film. It's just not something that
it's hidden.
I would ever really care to watch again.
Yeah,
I've seen it twice now. I'm hoping I don't ever have to watch it a third time, but
right.
You know, I might have to watch the second one if you invite me back, but oh well.
I have to get that one. So,
funnily enough, very, 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 very recently, I found out that there is a Necromantic comic series going on at the minute. So,
really?
if you want to read about necrophilia, have a look for that.
I'll pass. Okay, now I'm going to move on to my gore score. I'm gonna only have to give this a 5 because, well, no, I think 6. I think I'll go with a 6 because, I mean, you do have the car accident in the beginning, and that's really the only, like, gory part. But after that, you get the goopy... And I know you're not a fan, but you get the dead body, but it's not bloody. It's not really like, I don't. It's just slimy.
So I think that's a lot more vile than the blood and the guts. You know, it's sort of at a point where people are desensitized with that sort of shit. Because you see it in every fucking horror film for like the past 40-50 years, but
right, but
rotting corpses, I can't really ever think of any other films where I've seen anything like that in this sort of detail, so props to him for that.
And maybe it was because of the subject, but yeah, I giggled like probably more than I should have through this movie.
See, I do get why you find it funny, because the whole reason I picked these films up in the first place, it's because I heard they were very comedic.
Uh-huh.
And like you say, there are like slapsticky, funny parts, but I wouldn't say they're comedies in any stretch.
Right.
There is some dark humor in it, but it's not... You wouldn't fucking stick it on for a laugh.
No, I mean, I wouldn't... I would definitely not call this a comedy, but I think... Maybe it's the way they covered the subject material. I don't know, but I just, or maybe it
was... Yeah, I get it. The wheelbarrow scene's funny. The passing of the eye back and forth is funny. the fucking money shot is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I giggled, but as far as an overall score. Just like you said, I wouldn't be able to put this on again. I mean, I could if I had to, but yeah, I would go with like just a normal a flat 6. You know, it's one of those movies that yeah, I probably won't ever need to watch again, unless I was trying to shock somebody, or you know, if they heard about it and they're like, oh, well, you know, let's watch it. Okay, fine. But from a movie standpoint, it does kind of cover, I mean, obviously it covers topics that are controversial and a little bit nasty, but it's not
apparently
really...
When this first came out, it was, you know, obviously it was banned all over the place.
Right.
But it was actually in Germany, apparently. I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently in Germany it was actually just even illegal to own a copy. You could be prosecuted just for having it in your house.
Well, that's interesting. And I know, well, at least according to IMDb trivia, that it said Yorg was, he made this movie specifically to battle, you know, censorship and stuff like that. So
yeah, I definitely get the impression he's a director that likes to push boundaries.
Yeah, and test the limits of what is what can be made.
It seems like a whole Rage Against the Machine, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me type deal. It's like, you tell me I can't make a film about fucking corpses, I'm gonna make a film about fucking corpses.
Because why not? But okay, so, alright, we got that out of the way. Go ahead and give your show a shout out here real quick.
Okay, so I do a show with my buddy Vic called Radio Nasties, where we watch film, tear it apart, have a laugh with it. We like to mix it up. We like to do, you know, some hidden gems, some cult favorites. We throw in personal favorites. We throw in mainstream stuff. We like to do a bit of everything over there. If you want to find us, head over to any podcast platform. I'm sure you know where they are. Search Radio Nasties. Give us a listen. Head over to Instagram at Radio Nasties if you want to get in touch with me, or if you want to get in touch with my co-host Vic, head over to Twitter at rnasties.
And you guys are, well, no, that doesn't even matter because this won't be out for a while. But if you're listening to this, I mean, obviously you know where to find the Extreme Horror Replay podcast, but Nancy is still alive, I assure you. She's not buried in the backyard somewhere. She's just busy with school. But yeah, you can find us on Instagram at @XHR_podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Horror Replay. We do have a Facebook page, but it's not very active. But we are also on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple and Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, CastBox, you name it. We're out there. Just search up Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. And so, yeah, from our social distancing from 5,000 miles away, and I hope we don't have to keep saying that for much longer, but from 5,000 miles away, all the way from the UK, Richard, I appreciate you coming on and covering this little ditty of a show, or this little ditty of a movie. But yeah, so sir, I'm going to bid you farewell for now. And
thanks for having me again. It was a good time as always.
Yeah, it's always a fun time. Next time, I know. Well, I'll take this off channel in a minute here, but so Goreheads, stay gory, be good to each other, and stay safe out there. All right, we will talk to you all later. See ya.